Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the co-host of this podcast. We began earlier this week on Monday with an episode on the final presidential debate. And since then, it's been an extremely eventful week with the Supreme Court taking some controversial standpoints on, you know, election integrity and voting rights. And then also, you know, the death of Walter Wallace Jr., another in a string of police brutality cases over the past couple of weeks, months. It has been a very eventful week. And to wrap it all up, it is myself and Damian for our first duo episode in kind of the last couple of weeks. We've been swamped up in like debates, conversations, having guests on. It's our first time to where we can sit down and just have a conversation, you and I, about the issues. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I feel like it's really good. I enjoy these episodes. I always get the feedback from our guests that they also enjoy them. So I'm happy to do them whenever we get the chance to do them. I love having guests on, and I know that we're going to have some amazing guests coming up this week. If you guys haven't seen our Politician Day of Action, please go check that out on our Instagram. We also changed our website, so now it's politician.com, no longer Politician Podcast, but go check out the Day of Action on our Instagram. Basically, we're going to be live streaming all day election day. We're going to see if we can get video footage up for you guys. You know, we're working to do some big stuff. We have some crazy guests, Simon Anholt, Ted Terry, Angelica Klaus, again, you know, coming back on our podcast. Some of these guests reoccurring. Simon Anholt's our new guest. But there's going to be some crazy content. And if you guys want to see that live, be sure to check out that Day of Action. But I'm excited to be here with you, Varun, again, just having this one-on-one conversation, kind of how we started the podcast. I think it's fitting that in a week, we're going to be having conversations all day, for like 12 hours straight. And before we get the opportunity to do that, we're just going to be chilling here, just talking, me and you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not just us having these conversations. You guys are also going to be a big part of it. You know, we're going to have you guys as a part of our whole Day of Action, asking these people questions, participating in live forums, seminars, debates. So it's going to be a very amazing day. We're also thinking to publish some of the episodes, some of the conversations on our actual podcast service. So we're going to have a lot of this stuff published for our viewers to see. So if you guys ever want to jump on the podcast as a student, this is your opportunity to do so. But I wanted to move into the actual events of today and the rest of the week. I think that probably the most pressing issue, and I began today talking about the whole Supreme Court issue with voter integrity, election integrity, and I was outraged about it. But I think the biggest issue thinking about it right now is really the death of Walter Wallace Jr. And I may be off on this, Damien, but I heard about this death literally, I guess we could say 2 hours ago, right? And this wasn't in my rear view, wasn't in my knowledge before then. And I saw it and I was like, really? Like, my first reaction was, really? This happened again? I mean, we've been through so much of this crisis, so much police brutality over the past couple of months that have crippled our nation and more than that, brought us to awareness over what's happening in our nation. And we see more stuff happening over and over again. And I begin to question myself, right? Is this stuff going to happen over and over again? And how do we stop this, right? And I think that what does it justice is by summarizing it. So what happened was this guy, Walter Wallace Jr., he had apparently bipolar disorder, walked out of his house with a knife. And so police officers were called to the scene. We still don't know why they were called to the scene, presumably because of the knife. But they came up, and their first instinct was to pull out their guns. They pulled out their guns, and the family kept shouting, reportedly, as per video footage of evidence. They kept shouting, this guy's mental. He has bipolar disorder and stuff like that. But the police officers proceeded to pull out their guns, and the guy walked closer, and they shot him 14 times, 14 rounds. And after that, the guy suffered fatal injuries, and he died. And so what this did is it inspired several protests right across the state of Pennsylvania where the event happened. And so that's the basically synopsis of what happened that day. What are your first interactions to what happened earlier this week, Damien? What are your first reactions?
My first reaction is, why didn't we hear about this when it happened? I don't know if we're getting numb to it. I was thinking as you were talking, the 14 shots, it kind of reminds me of what happened with Jacob Blake. And then I go to think, what did happen with Jacob Blake? Jacob Blake isn't dead. Where is he right now? What's the situation with Jacob Blake? Why isn't he on our TV screens? Is he still paralyzed from the waist down? Is he still handcuffed to his bed? I haven't, you know, being politically active, we talk about social media a lot and we talk about how quickly social media moves, but damn, I mean, even the mainstream media moves so quickly. So that's my first reaction. My first reaction is, why didn't I hear about this when it happened? My second reaction is, comes back to kind of the conversation that's being had about defunding the police. And again, I guess the name, the connotation that defunding the police has just because of its name is bad. But for those of you that don't know, that aren't aware, when I bring up the term defunding the police, I refer to adding more funds to the police department, but using them in a more responsible manner, or redirecting funds in a police department. And what I mean by that is, instead of paying these police departments to have these huge riot gears that they only use for training events, I've never seen a SWAT car with, I know that my county has several SWAT cars and that they have a SWAT team. I've never seen it used. I've never heard of it being used. I don't know if Varun, if you can testify to it being used besides like training and stuff for the police department here. And I think that that's the case
I've seen it being used as training.
And I think that that's the case for a lot of police functions, or a lot of things that happen with a lot of operations that are receiving funding from police departments. So my idea when, you know, we're bringing up defunding the police is just taking money away from those operations, these unnecessary, what is it? They spend almost, I mean, millions upon millions of dollars on these SWAT vehicles, on some crazy militarization that they just don't need. They just don't need it to fulfill their duties. But what they do need is this training to respond to incidents like the one that Varun's mentioning, where it's a mental health problem. And I think now more than ever, it's become apparent that, you know, whether you're Black, white, Latino, whether you're gay, straight, bisexual, mental health issues affect us all, some more so than others. You know, maybe they do affect minorities disproportionately. I don't have any stats on that, but I can assume that they do. But regardless, the fact of the matter is that the police are there to protect and serve, and their obligation needs to be to respond to these situations adequately. And they're not only not responding to them adequately, they're making the situations worse than they need to be. Obviously, in this case, that means that someone lost their life. And that's not a situation that we should be proud of. And that's where our efforts need to be focused. We need to learn on, you know, how to deal with this mental health crisis that our nation is facing.
You know, you make up a really good point. You know, we shouldn't be proud of these things. I mean, like I told you, my first reaction was, really? Like, really, our nation is still doing stuff like this? Like, it seems very surreal to have stuff happening like this, but also it seems surreal that this is happening. I mean, 7,000 Americans a day, as for the past couple of weeks, getting infected by COVID-19. Sorry about that. You know, we have the elections happening right now, and I think that's part of the reason for why this specific event is not getting enough media coverage. But, you know, you see Joe Biden get asked about this event after he voted for, obviously, himself, you know, at the polls. And he was asked, what do you think about, you know, Walter Wallace Jr. and the death of him? And he said, this is not a reason to riot or to loot. And it makes a powerful statement, especially when Democrats are being, you know, penned as the party that supports rioting and looting, that supports this kind of stuff that's going on right now. And it pens them as the party, what he said, pens them and this campaign as the party of racial justice, but also the party of reason, right? It's the party of the fact that, yes, people are suffering, but we're not willing to hurt other people to achieve our purposes. And that's what I think he cemented here today. And I think that he could have gone about it very wrong. I mean, Pennsylvania is still a toss-up state. It's very much a toss-up state, a battleground state, and he could have gone about it very wrong. I think his answer was really good. But that diverts me from the point that I was trying to make before. Damian, I wanted to address your point. The fact that police officers aren't trained well or given enough materials to carry out their purposes to protect citizens first, right? This department, Damian, I don't know if you know this, but Pennsylvania's police department had $900,000. And the surprising thing is that both police officers in this incident who killed Walter Wallace Jr. didn't have a taser on them. I'm going to repeat that for our viewers. This police department had $900,000 at their disposal and did not equip these police officers with a taser. What's more is the fact that these police officers came up, and the first thing, as per video footage that they did, and as per their attorneys, and as per every single account of the situation, the first thing that they did was pull out their guns. What's the first thing a police officer is taught? The first thing a police officer is taught is to de-escalate the situation before it reaches the extent to which you have to pull out a gun. The first thing these officers did was pull out their gun, and in that, they escalated the situation. So I think that in this situation, the blame most definitely falls upon the officers because they defied whatever training they were given. Because I know police officers have these kinds of training. The attorney of the family said very much. He was a police officer. He was like, this is not a product of just racism or bigotry. It's a product of bad training. And giving somebody just lethal force to push at a person, right? When you give a person, he compared it to, he just compared it to the fact that when you give a person a gun and you expect them to walk into a place in which they de-escalate a situation and nothing else, what do you expect them to do, right? The training they were given, the equipment they were given did not prepare them to adequately de-escalate the situation. Now, to kind of give you some perspective, guys, I want to show you guys a video of Attorney Johnson, the guy defending Walter Wallace Jr. and his family in this matter, how he speaks about why the family did not want to press murder charges upon the defendants, in this case, the police officers. I'm going to play this for you guys, and we will be back to analyze this footage.
No. And the short answer, no. The question was, are we calling for the officers to be charged? And I think that you're asking, are we asking for the officers to be charged with something like murder, right? That's what he's asking me. Yes, is that what he's asking me? That's what he's asking me? Okay, all right. And what I'm saying to you is, listen, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You understand? If you send the police to service communities, and the only thing you give them is a lethal weapon.
Dan, what do you think about this whole footage and what I just played?
Yeah, so I think that it goes back to kind of the circumstance that we were talking a little bit beforehand. And it goes back to the fact that they're not adequately trained, you know, when it comes to these circumstances. I agree with it to an extent. I most definitely agree with it to an extent. The issue I think that we have as Americans, and this is, I'm just going to quickly toss this over to you because I want to hear your perspective as it is, that we feel like justice has to be served somehow, though, right? Someone has to go to jail for this. What is your thought on that? Because that's what I'm thinking, right? Someone has to face punishment for this. So is it going to be the police department that faces punishment? Is it going to be the police chief that faces punishment? Is he going to spend time in jail? Is he going to go to prison? Do you get what I'm saying?
I absolutely get what you're saying, Damien. I think that in this circumstance specifically, too many people have faced punishment, have faced death, have faced injury from this police department for this to go unnoticed. Right? This is not just one isolated occurrence. This has been a string of occurrences across America, across the state, that are causing people to suffer every single day. And this is in the headlines every single day. So I think that the remedy to this is not necessarily a murder trial, right? I think there should be some prosecution against the defendants, in this case, the police officers, but it should not be a full-fledged murder trial. Instead, use your resources and use your time and effort and thought into reforming your police system. That's what needs to be reformed. If you talk about allocating time and allocating decisions and allocating what people have to focus upon giving people a taser, giving people a choice between shooting somebody or using non-lethal force. Train these police officers before they go out in the field to say, I'm not going to pull out my gun as the first thing that I do and scare somebody into making action. I'm going to de-escalate the situation. That's really, really important.
Yeah, we haven't talked about police brutality in a long time on the podcast. Yeah. It's how we started the podcast, for those of you that don't know. Go check out the earlier episodes if you have the time. I wouldn't say that they're as good as the episodes, you know, that we've put out recently, obviously, as we've grown, as we've done the podcast longer, we've grown and we've gotten better at it. But I think that they're still good episodes. And I still think that they depict our thoughts on the situation. So I want to explain why this situation is different. This isn't a George Floyd, you know, this isn't a George Floyd incident. This situation is different because I don't necessarily know in this circumstance if the headline is, you know, African American man dies to police brutality. I think that the headline is police officers respond inadequately or ineffectively or in a catastrophic manner to a man with mental health issues, mental health complications. Do you get what I'm saying here, Varun? This isn't an instance where it's the color of his skin that got him killed, but rather his mental health, a pre-existing condition that got him killed. I think that that's why this headline is different. I think that that's why this instance is different. In the case of George Floyd, I mean, it was 9 minutes on a man's neck. That didn't pose a threat to anybody. He was in handcuffs. That was the most wrongful death. That was the most, that was the biggest case of police brutality that I can think of in recent history. And it's the same thing with Breonna Taylor. Breonna Taylor, they do a no-knock warrant, which is, a flaw in the system. They enter her house. And then they shoot her 16 times, correct?
I believe so, Damien.
I think that both of these instances did happen in some way or another because of the color of their skin. I cannot say with the same amount of confidence that this instance happened because of the same reasons.
Yeah. And there could have been a racial, motivation for this. There could have been a racially charged reason for this. We have no idea. But I think that it begins by targeting the fact that police aren't an end-all be-all, right? Police don't solve every single community issue. That falls upon the community and not the officers involved. That falls upon community reform programs. That falls upon midnight basketball leagues. That falls upon schooling. That falls upon education. That falls upon so many things besides police officers. And when you call, they called a ambulance to appear on the scene, the family, and a police car appeared onto the scene. So it goes to show how much of a disparity there is between the care offered to these patients and the care that they're given, which in this case, their care was death by a gun used by a police officer, which in any case is not care. That's ignorance and that's recklessness. And moreover, that is just a semblance of a flawed police system that has been in need of reform from the start. So I think that this election, these next 4 days, will define what happens in this fight for justice in our policing system. Because even beyond this, there are so many issues. Our prison system, we've talked about it before. We talked about criminal justice reform. We talked about mass incarceration of people with nonviolent crimes. It doesn't stop here, guys. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm going to end on that. I want to hear your last perspective before we move on to other issues that happened over the week.
Yeah, absolutely. The election, just moving on to those other issues, the election is what's going to define all of these issues. It's going to define our response. It's the reason that we protested. It's the reason that, we rioted. It's the reason that, people went out and did all of this stuff in response to police brutality. So now that you guys went out, now that everyone went out, now that we show that we're united on the streets, show that we're united on the polls, go out and vote, go out and make your voice heard. This upcoming Tuesday, you guys are going to be hearing this tonight. So this upcoming Tuesday, make sure that your voice is heard if you can vote. Make sure that your grandma's voice is heard if she can vote. Make sure that your parents' voices are heard if they can vote. If you have an older sibling, make sure that they can vote, because there's a lot on, the ballot this year, from the Supreme Court and the future of it, to what we're talking about right now, police brutality, to healthcare, and something that, I mentioned, the Supreme Court, is going to affect healthcare. So I think that we can, kind of segue a little bit onto that point. Obviously, we had the I don't necessarily know that we brought it up Maybe we did bring it up on the podcast. We didn't, right? We haven't had a podcast since ACB got nominated, Amy Coney Barrett. So she was nominated. There was uproar about it. It happened. It felt like it happened so out of nowhere, right? It felt like it happened like sandwiched between these two events. I mean, this happened days before an election. Days before an election, not weeks, not months, not a year, as you know, the Republican Party had promised, or the Republican Party had stated, as it should happen. This happened days, hours before an election.
Yeah, and I mean, what makes it hard to understand, Damien, is the fact that during this whole election campaign, you talked about how elections are so important, right? And people's voices are so important. So it makes it extremely hard to understand why the conservative justices on this court, you know, without Barrett, Roberts, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, all wrote opinions that basically gave Trump a chance at winning this election by disenfranchising millions of voters. And I'll explain this, guys. So a federal judge earlier this week made the ruling that in Wisconsin, I believe it's Wisconsin, I'm going to check my sources, but it's all ballots postmarked by Election Day and received by November 9th should be counted. So ballots that weren't received directly on Election Day because of whatever mailing delays they happened, they would be accepted after the date, right? And what happened was this case reached on appeal the Supreme Court. And in a 5-3 decision, Roberts, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and the entire conservative Supreme Court voted to decline this federal judge's ruling and basically say every single mail-in ballot, absentee ballot, should be received by Election Day. And I wanna take your attention, Damien, and our viewers, our listeners, towards this quote from Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Right, I wanna take your attention towards this. He said in his reasoning behind this claim to basically say that voters who, you know, by no choice of their own, had their votes not reached the precinct at the exact time of November 3rd, he said this for his reasoning for why this vote should be invalidated. These states want to avoid the chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensue if thousands of absentee ballots flow in after Election Day and potentially flip the results of an election. I want to emphasize one thing. Potentially flip the results of an election. Flip the results of an election. And Elena Kagan made a very impassioned claim against this specific argument, but I want to hear what you have to think about this judge giving his reasoning for basically disenfranchising millions, thousands of voters who put in their votes after on the specific time, but their votes were received after November 3rd, by saying that these votes would flip the election results.
I think that it's a difficult situation, and to explain it in the most clear way as possible, I think that you did a good job explaining it. But basically, if you mail your ballot and there is a problem with the United States Postal Service and your ballot does not get to the location that it needs to be by November 3rd, it is invalidated. It is not valid. However, if you take your ballot, your mail-in ballot, to a drop-off location and drop it off there, then your vote will count. So right now, if you have a mail-in ballot, do not mail it. Take it to a drop-off location and drop it off there. It will make sure that it gets there before November 3rd and that there is no complication.
It's not every single state, Damien. It's just one state that they made the ruling on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just to clarify.
And just for some context, there was some rule. There was North Carolina and I believe Pennsylvania, who they ruled the exact opposite way, which makes this extremely hard to understand. They ruled in North Carolina and Pennsylvania that they could have the deadline extended to count the votes, just for some context.
Yeah. But I think regardless, you should go right now and drop off your ballot at a location, at a secure ballot drop box, just because of the fact that the United States Postal Service is having complications. I think that idea transcends state lines, regardless of what your state's ruling was on it, because you don't want your ballot being counted in March. And you know, with the United States Postal Service, you don't want to also know that your ballot wasn't counted until next August, because it takes about 8 months for them to send you back your stuff. I mean, that just, if you can, and if you still have not mailed your ballot, by the time that you're listening to this episode, go and drop it off at a location. Do not mail it the day before the election. Do not mail it the week before the election. Drop it off. Drop it off regardless of what state you're in. But on this ruling, I think that it's difficult from my perspective, because I really understand what is being said. You know, the quote was, these states want to avoid the chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensure thousands of absentee ballots flow in after the election and potentially flip the result of an election. I have a problem with that quote. I don't have a problem with what I think the quote was trying to convey. What I mean by me saying that I have a problem with the quote is that it would not flip the election, because all of these, it would not flip the results of the election. It would give a true definition of what the election should have been, right? And what I mean by that is all of these votes are legit. They just unfortunately were received days after, election day, days after November 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. I lost my train of thought there. This isn't a scam voting system. All of these votes are votes that would have counted had they been received on November 3rd is what I'm trying to say. So saying that, it's potentially flipping the election is a good thing. It's really voicing the opinions of the American people. However, I think that the problem is that if you're receiving these weeks after, November 3rd, and you're having substantial delays on when you're actually getting these ballots, and you're going into December, and you're going into January, and you're still counting these mail-in ballots, or you're still receiving them, rather, not counting them, you're still receiving these mail-in ballots, it can make for confusion, and it can make for complication. So on that note, I do agree with them.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing to understand here, Dim, I don't know if you know this, but they denied a 6-day extension. It wasn't a 2-month extension. It wasn't a 3-month extension. It was a 6-day extension to count the votes, right? And that's the biggest context to understand here. And I think that the biggest issue here, Damien, is the fact that he said to potentially flip the results of an election if these absentee ballots are counted. These results have not been made. The results of an election are not construed or decided until every single ballot has been counted. That is the basic democratic principle. So for Justice Kavanaugh to come out here in his own opinion and say these absentee ballots, mail-in ballots, submitted before November 3rd and that come 2-3, a couple of hours after the election, all the precincts have closed, that's basically invalidating millions of voters through no fault of their own. So we're not talking about ballots coming 2 months or 3 months later. We're talking about ballots coming 6 days at maximum later than November 3rd.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is that these, if you think about it, right, news companies declare a winner and maybe candidates declare a victory. But votes aren't, the election isn't decided until, 3 weeks after the actual November 3rd, the date happens. Because they have to check the votes, make sure they're all accounted for properly. So these results aren't confirmed or validated until a couple of weeks after. So to have a couple of days delay for a couple of states, I don't think it makes the impact the Republicans are construing it to make, especially when we are in a global pandemic. Nothing is normal right now. We are experiencing tons and tons and tons of voter disenfranchisement based upon the fact that we're in a global pandemic and voters can't can't go to the polls and vote sometimes because it's too much of a big risk for them. They can't go, maybe they can't go and stand in line, right? And they have to go and they have to mail it in. My mom hasn't received her mail-in ballot in Illinois yet. And she's concerned because she might go and early vote now, even though she does not want to go expose herself to the coronavirus. But what's happening right now is probably going to make her do that because she doesn't want her vote to be invalidated. So I think that the reasoning behind this is completely false. And moreover, what they're saying, insinuating, is so flawed. Because back in 2018, right, I want to put it into context. Back in 2018, during the House election, California Republicans lost almost half of their votes. Half of their seats, they were squashed. And what they did, they, instead of accepting the results, what they did was they stood back and they were talking about how Democrats had rigged the election. Donald Trump said, because absentee ballots had been counted after the election happened, he said that maybe they were putting in undocumented immigrants after the election, mm-hmm. right? There was so much controversy going around. So I think that this is a trend that follows us, no matter if it's before the election or after the election, or before coronavirus or after coronavirus. Yeah. This is a trend that follows us. Yeah. Republicans, when they lose the vote because of absentee ballots, they cry foul play. And we can't get rid of that, no matter how hard we try to make the claim clear that absentee ballots are needed now because of the fact that Americans are scared of going out of their homes and exposing themselves to this virus that is infecting 7,000 Americans a day, and that this president is doing nothing to handle.
Is it only 7,000 a day? I thought it was a lot more than that.
The 70 average is 75,000. Let's do the math. 75,000 divided by 7. It is 10,000 a day. Okay. I am mistaken.
No worries. You're around the same. I mean, it's fluctuating now, and we're getting more cases and more cases. So it's probably going to be more than 10,000 by the time. Well, you know, we were listening to this the night that we're recording it, but I'm sure that it's going to be more than 10,000 in a couple of days here. Probably, you know, even after Election Day. But I think that what we have to understand here is the fact that these aren't, you know, this isn't voter fraud. These are just votes being counted later. And I wasn't aware of the 6-day extension. So just to put this into context, these are legitimate votes. These are people that are registered to vote. These are people that meet all of the qualifications to vote. They're not dead, as some Republicans might claim. They're not illegal immigrants, as others might claim. They're just Americans who happen to have received either their ballots late and mailed them late, or you know, there was a complication in the United States Postal Service. That's the fact. The fact is that these are normal votes that would have been counted just had they been received what is being deemed on time, okay? Because the standard of being on time is different here. Yes, it's true what you're saying, Varun, where the news stations, typically we have an idea of who is going to be declared the winner, but there is no official winner until about 2 weeks later, when all the votes have been actually, you know, fully counted, and they've been recounted and rechecked and recertified, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But nonetheless, what we're dealing with here is a matter that's extremely important and something that we cannot overlook. There's a very low chance for fraud. I think there's actually a smaller chance for fraud with mail-in ballots than there is with going in person. Or there is the same. I can assure you that it is not. If it were to be more, it is not a lot more. But you know, fraud is not the issue here. The issue is that Democrats are this year, Democrats are going to vote by mail more than Republicans. And that isn't because on average they do. That isn't because they like voting by mail more. That isn't because they typically vote by mail more. That's because of the rhetoric that the president of the United States has put out. The fact that, you know, oh, liberals vote by mail. Actually, there has been, you know, before this year, on average, there was no distinction between who voted by mail more. You know, we've been voting by mail since the Civil War, and there has never been a distinction on who voted by mail more, whether it was Democrats or Republicans. But the issue is that this year, the president is telling, you know, his voters to go to the polls and vote. And, you know, Democrats are saying not necessarily the opposite, but they're saying, you know, if you can vote by mail, vote by mail. It's safer. It's an option. It's there. It's been pushed a little bit more by the Democratic Party, and it's been shot down a little bit more than the Republican Party. So this year we have a difference in numbers when it comes to that. But nonetheless, even with that difference in numbers, it seems to be a substantial, based on the polls and based on the numbers that we're getting in, it seems to be likely that Joe Biden is going to win. You know, declaring victory, what, we're 4 days out from the election, that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. And Joe Biden is working his butt off, campaigning every single day. But if you're just looking at the numbers, this seems extremely difficult. It seems extremely difficult for Donald Trump to pull off. Just because of how conservative polls are being, you right? Because like right now, everyone's probably clutching their teeth together and holding their breath as I'm saying that Joe Biden is more than likely going to be the next president of the United States. You're like, no, we said that in 2016. Well, that's what all the polling stations are doing too. They're being careful because they said it in 2016. So they're being conservative in a lot of circumstances. They don't want what happened in 2016 to happen. So we have to understand that the polls are not wrong, that the election is not wrong, that these projections are more than likely accurate projections as they have been in the past. But the only way that these projections are going to be true is if you get on and vote. And ironically, or depending on how you look at it, the state in which voting might be most important is the one that we're bringing this episode to you guys from, Georgia. We have two Senate elections here, elections that have gained recent attraction because of our Senator David Perdue's decision to pull out of his debate this Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, with his opponent, John Ossoff. Also, the Republicans running here are now shooting ads spewing against each other for the special election. To put this into context, for those of you that did not listen to our episode with Joe Lieberman, Matt Lieberman.
I wish it was Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
I wish, man.
Yeah, but you know, with Matt Lieberman, it was an amazing, amazing episode. But for those of you that did not listen to that, there is a special election here in Georgia, and there's a special Senate election here in Georgia, and then there's just an election, a Senate election. So for, you know, just to put it in layman's term, that means that there's two Senate seats, United States Senate seats, up for grabs. There's going to be more than likely a runoff in the special election. And how a special election works is everyone puts their name on the ballot. There's a bunch of candidates on the ballot. And if you get more than 50%, then you win. You win and you become senator. However, because there's so many candidates on the ballot, that's very unlikely. So what happens is they take the top two candidates and they put them into a runoff that will end in January. And those top two candidates right now are expected to be on the Democratic side, Reverend Warnock, and on the Republican side, we don't know. We really do not know. What is happening and what has happened is that if Georgians go out and vote, Vroon, and I want to hear your stance on this and your take on, it could be very likely that Reverend Warnock squeezes through while the Republicans are doing, you know, some friendly fire on their end, and David Perdue is pulling out of debates. There might be just two senators and a vote for Joe Biden from Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go ahead to an ad break with our sponsor, Anchor. I'll be back here to talk about the whole situation in Georgia. All right, so I think you made a very good point, Damien. I think that the point here, I want to begin by addressing your previous claims. I think that the potential for the polls being wrong this year is much lower than previous years, especially 2016, because the fact of the matter is that there's no October surprise like there was on October 7th of last year, or 2016, last election cycle. The fact of the matter is that 85 million Americans have already voted. So to say that there's some kind of October surprise, which apparently Tucker Carlson's attempted October surprise fell apart with his documents, unfortunately, for our conservative friends, fell through the mail and apparently did not surface. That fell apart, right? But the simple reality is that over 75 million Americans have voted, guys. And I think that this kind of turnout before an election, it signals either heavy enthusiasm for conservatives or heavy enthusiasm for Democrats. I have never seen anything like it before. I mean, Hawaii has had 104% of their votes in 2016 covered by absentee and early voting ballots alone. That's insane. The enthusiasm in this election is absolutely insane. Now, I want to talk about this. You talked about how liberals and conservatives had the same amount of people voting by mail before this election. Forget liberals. Donald Trump voted by mail before this election. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that. right? He's the one against early voting because it apparently it hurts him now. But let's not forget the fact that Donald Trump, our president, who is apparently, let me go look at his tweet because I think he tweeted just 2 hours ago about this whole situation. He's against mail-in voting. He was talking about how November 3rd should be the last day to get votes because that benefits him. Because it just takes much longer to count these mail-in votes than it has before. But I think that, you know, the jungle primary is an interesting thing because there is no Republican or Democratic primary. As Damien said, there's two Republican candidates that are in the lead here for the most part and one Democratic candidate. Matt Lieberman is still hovering at 10 to 9%. And there's like a slew of other candidates in this election. But these are the three main candidates, Doug Collins, Kelly Loeffler, and Raphael Warnock, the Rev. The Rev began, Damien, let's talk about this. The Rev began with not a lot of votes. He began behind Matt Lieberman, and he rose up the charts off of support from establishment Democrats like President Barack Obama, Stacey Abrams, Nakema Williams, who we've had on before. And he rose up the charts, and I saw the Rev speak a couple of weeks ago, right? I saw him speak. I saw John Ossoff speak. I saw Carolyn Verdot speak. And there is so much enthusiasm around Reverend Warnock's election that it is insane. You know, even compared to John Ossoff and Carolyn Verdot, who congratulations to John Ossoff for an amazing debate, which apparently coerced David Perdue into stopping all debates in the future. So I would say job well done. But Reverend Warnock was getting so much praise and enthusiasm, and the guy pulled up in a bus, guys. To give you some context, the guy pulled up in a full-on tour bus, and he came on, and he was speaking for, I think, 5 to 10 minutes. He spoke about how this election could change the trajectory of democracy, of Congress, of social justice, racial justice in America. And, you know, it went from Reverend Warnock not getting enough votes to maybe advance to the primary election with somebody else. But now the goal here, Damien, is for Reverend Warnock to get over 50% of the vote so that in this jungle primary, he advances directly to the U.S. Senate. That's the goal here right now. It's not just competing against Kelly Loeffler and Doug Collins. It's about beating everybody and getting in to the Senate. Because if you think about it, if he advances maybe – and I'm going on a tangent here, but I think that if he advances past some kind of threshold and goes into a primary with either Kelly Loeffler or Doug Collins, which is what it may look like coming in the future, he would maybe lose. There's a high likelihood. Because Republicans right now, this is their best chance. They're divided between two candidates who equally support Trump. I don't see any difference between them, guys. I don't see any difference. I just feel like Doug Collins is a little bit more conservative. But that's the matter, right? If one of them advances, Raphael Warnock, go ahead.
No. I was just curious. You think that Doug Collins is more conservative? You go on with your point. I
believe so.
Okay.
I think that they're both equally conservative. I think that they're both equally blind to the ignorance of President Trump. I mean, you saw Kelly Loeffler go out. She was asked about the Access Hollywood tapes, and she said, "I had no idea what it was."
Every single
American who is at least a little bit involved in politics knows what the Access Hollywood tape is. I'm going to end on this. Raphael Warnock, the Rev has got to get over 50% to have the best chance of winning this election because we do not want the Republicans to consolidate their vote in that election behind one candidate.
As a centrist, as I am often reminded in this political climate, as a centrist, I want the best candidate put forward. So yes, you as a more liberal, you do not want Raphael or Reverend Warnock He's also gone away from using the title Reverend. I remember that he used Reverend a lot in his earlier campaign ads.
And now he's a Rev.
He's the Rev.
He's the Rev.
All right.
I got a banner in my front yard saying the Rev.
Awesome. That's what's up. But nonetheless, there's for context. I just wanted to address the point that David Perdue is going to be at a Trump rally this weekend, as opposed to debating with his opponent, John Ossoff. You made the point that John Ossoff made him almost quit, which some might argue, but just to be fair, the context is the fact that that he's going to be at a Trump campaign. He believes that is his best use of time. And simply, I would agree with him. I think that he needs to try to get as many Trump supporters as he can right now. On the term of Doug Collins and what's the one that's Loeffler, the not politician. She's just not politically there. she's just not politically involved. She doesn't know how to answer. You know, we talk about politicians or like, oh, being a politician. There's a reason that politicians are politicians. There's a reason. They know how to answer questions. She's not there yet. And it's just embarrassing for Georgia, like with the Access Hollywood thing. Like, yeah, it's embarrassing to have a president that that, you know, says something like that. But it's so embarrassing to have a senator that hasn't heard like the shot around the world. Like, everyone knows about the Access Hollywood tape. You know, I'm sure that you could go to like a remote village in the center of nowhere and you'd be like Access Hollywood and they'd be like grabbing by the pussy. Like, it's just one of those things that like just goes hand in hand, right? And it's just that disappointment in her not knowing where that's from. But you know, with your kind of stance on Reverend Warnock, I think Reverend Warnock has a very good chance of pulling off that 50%. But I think that even if he were to go into a runoff with one of the two Republican candidates, if I think that what happens with Perdue and Ossoff is going to be the best showing of what's going to happen with him. And what I mean by that is that if Ossoff wins and Biden, you know, secures the vote here in Georgia, then it's more than likely going to be Reverend Warnock winning. If Ossoff loses and Trump secures the vote here in Georgia, then, you know, in the case of a runoff, I'd say that Reverend Warnock loses. But nonetheless, I think that we have some crazy stuff going on here around the nation. I think that we have a lot of divisiveness. I think that this climate is absolutely insane a couple days before the election. Yeah. And I'm just happy to be able to, you know, be here and have the conversation with you. I want to thank you, you know, for being an amazing co-host and adding to the conversation as you always do. Sorry, give me 1 second.
Yeah, I want to say something, guys. I want to say that on Damien's point to end this podcast about the fact that Kelly Loeffler seems like a person who's ignorant to politics and what's going on politically right now, I want to say that this woman did not know about the Access Hollywood tape, but Kelly Loeffler somehow contended that as per her Twitter page about the Hunter Biden and Burisma dealings, these dealings deserve to be investigated. So I'm going to repeat that. She knows more about a presidential candidate on the Democrat side, son, and his purported dealings, then she knows about the president and him, a tape of him literally saying, grab him by the pussy. So it just shows how much partisanship and how much dissonance people have from reality today. And it's, you know what, it's extremely saddening, Damien. I think that it is an issue that has to be fixed in our nation, but that's for another episode. We're going to, you know, we started filming 45-minute episodes today, so I hope you guys enjoy our new segment. Let us know what you think about this time, because it's a temporary, hopefully, shift. We'll think about making it longer later, but this is our current length right now to help you guys listen to the episodes, finish them up, and get more content into your days. But that's all for me. Thank you guys for having me. Thank you, Damien, for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being an amazing co-host once again, you know, adding insight to this conversation, adding perspective, bringing the facts, bringing your opinion, you know, which is just as important as the facts. And that's something that we forget, which is why we invite every single one of you to go out and have a conversation, you know, whether it's someone that agrees with you or disagrees with you, someone that that's a good listener or bad listener, you know, go out and have those conversations about your opinions, about their opinions, listen to their perspectives, the reasons that they think the way that they do, you know, whether it's at the dinner table, whether it's at school, whether it's with a teacher, with a friend, go out and have these conversations. Be sure to, you know, follow us on Instagram, follow us on all social media at Politine Show. Be sure to check out our old website on the new domain. We were updating it. We're excited for that. We're ready to bring you guys some more amazing, amazing content. That's politine.com, not Politine Podcast anymore. A little bit more fancy. Be sure to also check out the Day of Action and RSVP for that if you have not already. The link for that is on the Instagram. That is specifically in the bio. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you guys all for tuning into another episode of Politine. Be sure to once again tune into that Day of Action and stay tuned for more amazing content coming your way. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Georgians. Hello. hello, global citizens, and most importantly, hello, concerned Americans. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, wherever you're coming from. I'm coming from Suwanee, Georgia, and my name is Varun Karatala. Once again, I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast here with my best friend, classmate, Damien Galvin. Now, myself and Damien created this podcast in order to, first of all, bring in perspective along with facts, because we believe that every single political discussion should start with conversation. And second of all, to look at the past and use the issues of our past to perfect a future that we're all proud of. Now, this podcast today is going to be about the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, the speakers of the DNC, and how they have, you know, proceeded with their points, proceeded with their questioning, proceeded with their reasoning to make Joe Biden the presidential nominee for 2020 and the presidential candidate on the Democratic side. A lot of different perspectives, like we said, along with the facts brought in by this whole convention. We truly hope that you guys enjoy today's episode, and please visit www.polititeenpodcast.com for more information, more amazing content. Once again, thank you to our amazing research director, Julia Hartman, our amazing graphics team, Jada Pilling and Yi Shen, for this amazing episode. And as always, thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing segment. Let's get on with it.